At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show on CBS Audio Network. And in my conversation with the author, John Tamney, his new book, When Politicians Panicked, The New Coronavirus, Expert Opinion, and a Tragic Lapse of Reason. It is now late March, early April, and Washington is engaged. The 20th century called it command economy. I don't believe that word was used in April in any negative fashion, but it was the same. The economy of the United States was about to be nationalized, admittedly half-heartedly, but the effect is still with us. John, no such thing as government investment, and yet that's how it was presented. No such thing as government picking winners, and that's how it was protected. In addition, John, there's no such thing as a government choosing who's going to lose if we don't intervene. That's what happened. You have a wonderful quote from Adam Smith, 1776 Adam Smith, that careful Scotsman, that capital increases with parsimony. Capital decreases with profligacy. What happened in the spring of 2020, John, in the national government?
Well, the national government, after causing and subsidizing a national economic collapse, decided that it was going to throw trillions of dollars at it. Basically, command and control was imposed such that the U.S. economy was in desperate shape and businesses were dying and individuals losing their jobs, at which point the very politicians who had enabled local and state politicians to wreck things so thoroughly threw $2.9 trillion at it. They were basically going to try to save with money the businesses and jobs they destroyed. What they did is they just naturally delayed the recovery because in a normal economic situation, a virus is spreading. Maybe people do get scared. Maybe people stop consuming. Maybe people stop going out. Probably some businesses die based on that. But the saving sets the stage for the rebound, as in suddenly the parsimony sets the stage. It creates more capital for businesses to access to rebound. In this case, politicians hoovered it up and just threw it indiscriminately at what they broke.
You name a Harvard professor, Jason Furman, whom I believe was in the Obama administration as an advisor, a counselor. And he wrote a column about this time, which in effect said, rain cash on the American people. John, can government giving out checks, and eventually, I don't recall, there were $1,400 or $1,200 checks, they've moved the number around, and providing extra money to those who were disenfranchised, unemployed, during the forced contraction of the economy in New York City and everywhere else across the country. Can giving money to those people stimulate the economy? Does it work that way, John, that we'll get growth if we hand out cash? Because that's what Mr. Furman believes.
No, it doesn't. It very clearly doesn't. If it worked, it would have worked in the past. If it worked, West Virginia would be a booming economy today. Because politicians have been throwing the money of others at West Virginia for decades with no success. And so Furman got it exactly backwards. What you need to grow an economy is investment. You need to match investment with talented, innovative people. So right when the economy needed investment, it needed intrepid capital being directed toward businesses that had been impaired by government error, Furman, and to be fair, Republicans were calling for massive government spending. Basically, shift precious capital from those most capable investing, yes, I'll say it, the rich, and hand it off to those most capable of consuming. Well, consumption, once again, doesn't drive economic growth. See West Virginia. What drives it is investment, yet the political class hoovered away trillions of dollars from those most capable in the form of treasury borrowing that naturally delayed what would have been a much quicker recovery.
Andrew Ross Sorkin, the distinguished columnist and blogger and commentator for the New York Times, he keeps Deal Book, said that it was necessary to nationalize U.S. investment. What does that mean, John? What Can you nationalize an investment class?
He thought so. He thought naively. He literally was calling for the federal government to spend $10 trillion basically lending to all businesses so that they would keep 90% of their employees. Basically try, and so think about what this means. On its own, what is our economy? And I don't believe in GDP, but let's just say it's $16, $17 trillion economy. He wanted government to become a size investor, allocating over half of the size of the economy. So on its own, it fails. We know this from the 20th century. But let's remember also, the reason the U.S. economy is the most dynamic in the world, and this is something you and I have been discussing for years now, is that businesses die all the time. Silicon Valley is the richest region in the world, not because all of its businesses succeed, but precisely because the vast majority of them fail. We have no sacred cows in the U.S. economy. And so no matter what happened, with or without the virus, with or without political panic, lots of businesses were going to die in 2020. That's just what happens every year. Yet Sorkin and the political class, Republican and Democrat, were basically calling on government to freeze in place the economy, just prop up everything indiscriminately without regard to whether it has any future as a way to save the economy. Well, I submit to you, based on logic and history, that is the exact way to wreck an economy.
Suddenly, John, you remind me of Marcus Aurelius. You can't step into the same river twice. You're making me think metaphorically the economy is a river, and that the recommendation from these senior commentators in the spring of 2020 was stop the river. Stop the river. Don't let the river fall. Nothing. Now, the stimulus package was passed. CARES Act. Money was distributed. You write that it was anti-investment. How so, John?
Well, it's anti-investment because anything that aims to stimulate consumption logically deprives those most capable of investing of putting the capital to work. And so as a rule, when you shift trillions of dollars from those with the most, again, the rich, that they have the ability to invest and put it in the hands of consumers, yeah, they're going to buy things, but that doesn't stimulate economic growth. That just freezes in place. It just deprives the economy of the investment necessary for it to grow.
You entertain a thought experiment. What if the politicians had done nothing? And you point us to John Delgado, who works for FarmShare and lived, I don't know, up to 60 days in a tent. What does that illustrate to you, John, a man living in a tent, and compare that to what if the politicians had done nothing?
Well, it's an important distinction because Delgado not only was living in the tent, but he was doing so in Florida. He was working in a food cooperative in Florida. And so Florida was, again, one of the states that closed last and opened very quickly. But he was fearful of his family. He had a big family. And so each day at work, he wore a mask. And when he came home, rather than interact with his kids or interact with his wife, he slept in a tent because he feared in going to work that maybe he was going to be exposed to the virus. Now, it's a reminder that he did this in a state where there were no such requirements foisted on the people. He did it, and it's a reminder that we don't need a law generally to avoid that which might kill us or that which might make us ill. And so if politicians do nothing, are we really so naive as to presume that Americans were just going to blithely go about their lives and not care about getting potentially very sick or maybe in certain instances dying? I mean, the very question answers itself. But think about what also happens if they do nothing. Americans would have adjusted on their own because they don't like to get sick or die. But that reduced spending would have caused near-term difficulties for business, but it would have also created massive capital formation for businesses to borrow, to seek investment. Again, businesses never die of lack of money. What they die of is a lack of investor trust. And so if investors could have seen them in April of 2020, yeah, you're struggling, but the future is bright. We're going to get on from this. They would have very readily on their own in private fashion put money to work in businesses small and large precisely because there would have been lots of capital waiting there for them to do just that.
You cite Holman Jenkins, the distinguished columnist for The Wall Street Journal, who has an anecdote that's wonderful. Hand sanitizer disappeared before Berlin shut down. The people were not waiting for politicians to announce problems. They took it upon themselves. I remember the toilet paper disappeared weeks before there were shutdowns across Europe. Weeks, John. Weeks. Now, wonderful, John. The politicians acted. In other words, they did something. However, what they did is a puzzle. And when we come back, we're going to turn to the decisions, the payroll protection program, the investment in private business from the Federal Reserve, especially the Federal Reserve, seeking to rally the markets with assurances of low interest rate. The book is When Politicians Panicked, The New Coronavirus, Expert Opinion, and a Tragic Lapse of Reason from John Tanley. I'm John Batchelor.